Part 2, Chapter 6, Godliness, Part 2. When the candidate attains godliness on the sevenfold path, something in his body changes. A totally different new reality of being is founded without any great damage to the normal functioning of the dialectical personality occurring by that change. The candidate starts living two lives, a decreasing life and an ever-increasing, ever-growing one. For a second, serpent fire is formed, for which purpose the sympathicus is utilized. As explained, the nervous sympathicus consists of two strands, one to the left and the other to the right of the spine. They begin at a point above the medulla oblongata, a spot where the two strands of the sympathicus and the pineales fire circle meet. Furthermore, they are in contact with the royal chamber behind the frontal bone. The two canals of the miraculous second spinal marrow form two differentiated fields. The function of one field is stimulative, male, creative. The function of the second field is reactive, female, productive. The universal doctrine refers to the male field as Pingala, the female field as Ida. In the Book of Acts, they are referred to as Ananias and Sapphira, which literally means divine grace which reveals itself in beauty. Finally, we discussed the process in which the new magnetic stream is taken in solely via the heart, HIE, via the spirit spark atom, then ascends to the head sanctuary by means of the thymus hormone via the bloodstream, descending again via the right strand of the sympathicus to make contact in the plexus sacralis with the left strand, which redirects the stream upwards to its starting point in the head sanctuary. This new magnetic circuit is the second serpent fire and, under the direction of this consciousness, the new life is progressively revealed in all who possess it. But you will certainly understand that a great new responsibility arises. Different high demands arise for all who come to partake of this new magnetic process. It is about this that we now wish to speak to you. As a point of reference, let us take the story of Ananias and Sapphira, as found in Acts 5. But a man named Ananias with his wife Sapphira sold a piece of property, and with his wife's knowledge he kept back some of the proceeds and brought only a part, and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back part of the proceeds of the land? While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not at your disposal? How is it that you have contrived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. When Ananias heard these words, he fell down and died. The young men rose and wrapped him up and carried him out and buried him. After an interval of about 3 hours, his wife came in, not knowing what had happened. And Peter said to her, tell me whether you sold the land for so much. And she said, yes, for so much. But Peter said to her, how is it that you have agreed together to tempt the Spirit of the Lord? Hark! The feet of those that have buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out. Immediately she fell down at his feet and died. When the young men came in, they found her dead, and they carried her out and buried her beside her husband. And great fear came upon the whole community. On hearing this story of the first Christian community, the casual observer might remark, well, in those times, people didn't do things by halves, did they? Indeed, taken literally, we cannot escape the conclusion that a double murder was committed in which the civil authorities did not intervene. Imagine you were to sell a block of land at a price of $1,000 and you proposed that your family members keep $200 in order to be able to buy something or other and to donate $800 to Lectorium Rosicrucianum, the Golden Rosy Cross. We assure you that our financial committee, upon receipt of the amount, would certainly not commit a double murder, even if they knew you had not entirely emptied your purse. We deliberately put things in this light to prove the nonsense of taking this story literally. More logic is to be found in even the most trite fairy tale. Some have tried to explain the story by pointing out the communist law of communal property and presupposing that the earliest Christians placed themselves under this law on pain of death. But the consciousness of those who say this is still completely rooted in the Old Testament basis. They fail to see that true Christianity is absolutely non-violent, that Christian communal property cannot be based on a written law, and that in such a community the death penalty is out of the question. Therefore, if we view the story with natural eyes, it is so hopelessly wrong that we must opt either for a degradation of the Book of Acts or for a totally different meaning. The spiritual school of the modern Rosicross does the latter. As we already stated, this story alludes to the twofold Sympathicus, which becomes a second serpent fire, a second consciousness for the candidate in the spiritual school who has become ennobled to it. When this godliness reveals itself in the pupil, when the new magnetic circuit commences, the pupil must behave in complete accordance with a new inner divine law. Literally, bodily, he enters a new world, a new community, which we may certainly designate the first Christian community. It is the first conscious contact with the Christ radiations of a totally new type. Whoever wishes to be taken up into this community must behave according to its rules. These rules are not based on juridical laws, precepts, and articles. There are no gallows, guns, or prisons, police, or panels of judges behind them. In this order, there is no apostle sitting on a chair, and there are no young men carrying off the scene, people who have died of fear. No, it is a self-regulating order. You need air to fill your lungs. You need air to live. This is a spontaneous necessity of life. And in the natural order in which you live, you receive that air. It is there for everybody. If you now step into a vacuum, however, you will suffocate. Therefore, you don't do it, but if you do, you know the consequences. The same is true with regards to the first Christian community. There is no second or third Christian community. Or later on, perhaps a fourth. There is one ecclesia of the Gnosis, one community of universal life, a community with a logical, spiritual, and natural scientific order resulting from the number of magnetic lines of force active therein. Whoever wishes to partake of this community must go a path leading to it. We have indicated this path for you. It is a path opened by the permanent atom in the heart and leads to a new magnetic circuit in the twofold Sympathicus. This intercommunion with the Gnosis fire via the Sympathicus means a new consciousness. This consciousness reveals a new will, a new longing, a completely different plan of action, a totally different direction of life, an obedience perfectly attuned to the Gnosis. In short, a totally new mode of life attuned to the new natural scientific basis of a different world reality. Now imagine that something of what is new begins to become manifest in you. The spiritual school is continuously attempting to raise the pupils in general, and every one of them in turn, to this Christianopolis and urge them towards it. Thus, from time to time and by flashes, a flame of high magnetic vibration flares in the Sympathicus of many of them, but in a short time it is extinguished again. Before Sapphira can step in, Ananias, the stimulating radiation, has already been carried away by the young men, stone dead. Who are these young men? They are the most tragic grave diggers imaginable. They are the plexi circles whose task it is to cleanse the nervous system of wrong influences and simultaneously to remove the higher forces which can no longer maintain themselves because of the wrong influences. Thus, Ananias and Sapphira have not just been buried in the pupil once, but probably 100 times already. So, the following warning is applicable to the entire group of pupils of the spiritual school. In this way, you have betrayed, belied, and sold the great holy work of the Brotherhood and robbed the field of its serenity countless times because you spat the venom of the old serpent fire of the central spinal cord into the new serpent fire, while the Brotherhood cared for you and taught you how to stand on your feet. The Sympathicus cannot stand such an injection, and thus the seed of renewal has been carried away in you many times. Do you understand what an enormous danger your stone-hard, I-centrality, your obstinacy and self-willedness constitutes in your own system? Do you realize how you perhaps daily murder a possibility of rebirth within yourself? Do you see what the Brotherhood, in measureless patience, daily endures of you when, with incomprehensible tenderness, it permits the divine grace to descend in the tower of the Sympathicus in order to make you rise to new beauty, while you yourself destroy this young principle by one stroke of the L? Do you realize what you cause the serving Brotherhood on earth to endure from you in the practical work, when it must watch how you spoil its labors by your conceit and delusion? What mercy lies at the bottom of it that, time after time, you are given yet another opportunity to attack the work? This you cannot understand because it is a love which surpasses every shade of your understanding. But this love is at the same time highly dangerous, for whoever will not hear and continues to maintain his eye instinct after this infinite patience is not punished in accordance with some prescription or article of the juridical law, but is again delivered up to his own eye craving. After having been protected countless times in the field of force of the Brotherhood from his own stupidity, such a person is placed before everything he himself has unleashed, until his own eye, bruised or crushed, has learned to subordinate itself, to resist the Satan of his auric being, and to devote himself in absolute obedience to non-being. Do you now see that self-liquidation is one of the first prerequisites to the path? Whoever does not bury the eye of natura cannot acquire the new eye. The new life must arise from the grave of natura. Whoever claims to serve the Brotherhood, but sets no bounds to his natura eye, whoever, in self-willedness and self-conceit, bends the universal doctrine according to his own taste, at the cost of the mystery school and on the responsibility of others, is thrown back on his own self-responsibility, with all the attendant consequences. Such a person has, as yet, lost nothing, for what had been born in the Sympathicus in great mercy never became his possession, because he himself killed it from the first moment on. However, when this person has finally learned to set the axe at his own I-passion, clearly aware that he is a prodigal son, when he starts to leave his seclusion in order to approach the Brotherhood in the correct manner, then the Father will meet him, embrace him, and show him more honor than he showed the son who remained at home. For whoever overcomes himself is stronger than he who conquers a city.